So with that, I'd love to just welcome everyone to today's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of CCLs that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and today's topic is outreach to agricultural communities. Outreach to the agricultural community can help cultivate allies, build support for the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act among farms and farmers of all sizes, agribusinesses, and consumers. Tune in today to learn what leaders of CCL's Agriculture Action Team are up to and their recommendations in your own connection building with your local agricultural community, including helping to understand the growing Climate Solutions Act. So let me introduce our two esteemed speakers and then pass it to them to take it from here. First up, we'll have the wonderful Nancy Jacobson. Nancy is CCL's Agriculture Action Team co-lead, as well as CCL's Southern Finger Lakes chapter co-lead. And with Nancy is the wonderful Julie Heath. Julie is a member of California Chico's chapter of CCL and is here today on behalf of the business climate leaders as the agriculture interview lead. So with that, thank you all so much for being here, and we look forward to jumping right in.
Well, thank you so much, Brett. So what does the Agriculture Action Team do? We have a lively ag forum and an informative ag monthly call. We engage farmers and ranchers in collaboration with BCL Ag, and we provide resources for lobbying members of Congress who care about agriculture. There's also an agriculture sector in the Business Climate Leaders. It has two outreach campaigns, and Julie will be telling you about one of them. So today we'll talk a little about what challenges climate change poses to agriculture, then about how to approach farmers and ranchers, and finally about the Growing Climate Solutions Act and the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. In 2018, 13 federal agencies worked together and released the fourth national assessment on climate change. In it, they cite three main challenges to agriculture: high temperatures, drought, and extreme precipitation events. High temperatures will increase in frequency and intensity, which can lead to heat stress in workers and livestock. Workers must work less to avoid these problems, and livestock will produce less milk and meat. In warm regions, the temperatures during winter may not be cold enough for stone fruits like peaches and cherries to set. In cold regions, warm spells in winter may cause early budding, and with the return of normal cold weather, especially freezes, these buds die. Both reduce yields, sometimes to where no fruit at all develops that season. Drought will increase in frequency and duration in many places. We can all imagine the problems with growing crops and forage in a drought. But there are ways that farmers can be resilient, as long as the drought doesn't last too long, like in California. By using conservation tillage, which disturbs the soil as little as possible, water can be retained. You can see the difference between the two fields in this picture and can understand what that would mean for yields. Extreme precipitation events, in other words, heavy downpours, have already increased in frequency in the central and eastern US, causing flooding, soil erosion, and nutrient leaching. Again, soil health practices can help farmers be more resilient. This demonstration shows the importance of keeping the soil covered with vegetation. Some of these little plots have vegetation cover and some don't. Water has been sprayed on these plots, and the front jugs catch the water that's run off the surface of the plot, and the back jugs catch water that has drained through the soil. So if you look at the two outside plots, you'll see that the one with the bare ground on the far right has lots of water that has run off, carrying soil with it. That's why it's so brown. And that's erosion. The back jug is empty, so water has not drained through it. The plot on the far left has lots of vegetation, and you can see there's no runoff, and that a small amount has drained through. The soil is able to absorb more water when there's vegetation. So the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act is CCL's primary ask. It will help reduce future climate change so that it isn't as bad as it would be otherwise. One of our supporting asks is the Growing Climate Solutions Act. As we've just seen, soil health practices can make farms more resilient to climate change, and this bill helps farmers transition to them. It will also help to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions coming from farms. In order to co-sponsor or vote for these two bills, some members of Congress need the support of farmers and ranchers. So how do we get their support? It may not be straightforward. A 2020 study on rural attitudes towards the environment and conservation found that the issue of climate change is highly polarized among rural voters, and that rural reluctance to accept the science around climate change may be based on concerns about regulations, and I would add environmental laws in general. They also found that messengers matter, and that the most trusted sources are scientists and local farmers and ranchers, while environmental advocacy groups, like us, were least trusted. So what do we do? Fortunately, the study also had some recommendations for advocates. Talking about forest and farmland conservation, renewable energy development, and incentives for conservation-oriented farming practices. We're focusing on the last, incentives for soil health practices. But feel free to use any of these in your conversations with farmers. So, the topic of healthy soils is a great place to start. This is a win-win. Most of all, because it can make farms more profitable by decreasing fertilizer and pesticide costs per yield, allowing steadier yields and profits, and making farms more resilient to extreme weather, as I was talking about earlier. And those things, not surprisingly, are important to farmers.
Hi, I'm Julie of the Agriculture Interview Team. We are partly CCL and partly in the Business Climate Leaders, which is a CCL-related but technically separate group that does Grasstop's outreach to business. Let's be crystal clear about the connection that healthy soils have to our common goal of climate mitigation. Going net zero is not enough. There's a reason that CCL is going out of its wheelhouse to support the GCSA when we make such a point of retaining focus on our favored Energy Innovation Act, synergy. Going net zero with our carbon emissions will not completely stabilize the climate. As we increasingly see, our weather is already dramatically destabilized by just the 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit where we are. To get back to normality, we need to go from the current 415 parts per million atmospheric CO2 back much closer to the 280 parts per million that we were at the dawn of Queen Victoria's reign. Pretty daunting, right? But it's not impossible. We just need two key things. One, stop putting greenhouse gases up into the atmosphere, which is what the Energy Innovation Act helps achieve, and two, draw carbon back down from the air and plant it, literally and figuratively, in the soil. That is what the Growing Climate Solutions Act, or the GCSA, contributes to. Transforming our agricultural practices is currently the most effective, economic, and eco-friendly way known to remove carbon. And it's eminently scalable. For that, we need farmers. But why would these generally conservative, eco-group-wary people ever want to talk with us? They are often afraid of command and control regulation-based governance. And, you know, with some justification, let's be honest. So we need to become the exception and establish trust. Our strategy for this is simple. Listen first. We want to become an honest broker between Ag and Congress. So we are conducting a survey using open-ended questions about soil health practices to reach to the Ag community and begin forming relationships with the real people in it. We are using the Growing Climate Solution Act, which is CCL's current secondary ask at lobby meetings with members of Congress who care about agriculture. So just for 3 minutes, I'd like you to put yourself, pretend you're a farmer or a rancher just for a moment and listen to our pitch. Agriculture feeds the world. Farmers, ranchers, and forest owners are stewards of the land whose work should be celebrated and supported, and whose opinions should be heard. Let us talk with you about what would smooth the way for farmers wanting to transition to soil health practices and why you personally do or don't use them. We'll also ask if you can support the bipartisan Growing Climate Solutions Act, which is a bill in Congress that's likely to pass. Our group of everyday citizens meets regularly with most every congressional office, and we will tell them your opinions. We all want the same thing: clean air, pure water, and healthful food for our families. Most American citizens are concerned about the unpredictable and threatening weather that we've been having. Farmers and ranchers are on the front lines, experiencing unexpected weather events, droughts, flooding, windstorms, prolonged heat, and more. Almost all climate scientists believe that these naturally occurring events are getting more frequent and often more intense as a direct result of our changing climate. Photosynthesizing plants convert sunlight and carbon into air and into nutrients for soil life. The soil becomes healthier, more productive, and more profitable when soil health practices are used. Healthier soil, healthier plants, healthier profits, and a healthier climate. Higher carbon healthy soils absorb more water, and they do it way faster. This decreases flooding, erosion, runoff, and the consequent loss of fertilizers and other expensive nutrient inputs. Trafficability improves. Nature thrives. Over time, you can reduce inputs since healthier soils yield healthier plants. Less chemical inputs means less chemical exposure for ag workers as well. Post-transitioning, fields usually give the same yields as their conventional neighbors, or slightly lower, and the lower inputs mean increased profits, while the climate benefits. Transitioning an operation does take time, effort, and money, so it isn't easy for every farmer. Enter the Growing Climate Solutions Act, which is a bipartisan bill that helps producers to get paid to implement additional soil health practices. These will be an important carbon sink if implemented at scale. The act has bipartisan support, has been introduced to both House and Senate, and appears to be on a fast track for passage. Our Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers will explain the bill and then listen to your opinions and lived experiences around soil health. We will speak in person about these with each congressional office. The survey will benefit farmers and help Congress to do the right thing for agriculture as a whole. You are the stewards of our soil. It is your legacy, your gift to your children and their children. Federal policy affects farming practices and research. Help us make soil health agriculture pay. Get your voice heard by emailing ccl.gcsa@gmail.com or just click the description box links below. Thank you so much. It's free market, not a government subsidy. Carbon is already a low-value cash crop, and we can literally talk about carbon farming. The current market rate is $15 to $20 per ton sequestered, paid by organizations and individuals that want to offset their own carbon footprints. And that equates to about that much per acre, give or take. Not very profitable, but enough to matter to larger operations. Current private markets like Indigo Ag, Truterra, and Nori are unregulated, and with the demand side clearly established, there are many new players jockeying for position. What the GCSA bill aims to do here is to remove roadblocks to the adoption of these markets. First, it isn't straightforward for producers who might not know about the markets and what is involved to use them. Technical details of practice implementation and carbon drawdown verification may be needed. If they do know about them, farmers aren't often sure which companies to trust. Trust is big. You've probably heard about websites that claim that you can offset your personal carbon footprint, right? Do you have any idea how to tell who is on the up and up? I sure don't. So the GCSA asks the USDA to address these problems with a one-stop shop website that has information and resources. USDA will also create voluntary certification programs for technical people and an advisory council to the Secretary of Agriculture that will make sure it all happens well. In addition, USDA will solicit feedback from producers about any remaining barriers that can be addressed to make the soil health transition easier. Perhaps you are wondering, carbon markets work like this. A farmer or rancher commits formally to a new soil health practice or several practices and implements them. An estimate is done of how much difference they will make to soil organic carbon. After a period of time, the farmer needs to verify the actual carbon amount sequestered. Then the farmer receives carbon credits from the market. These can be cashed in immediately or held for better market conditions. It's up to the farmer. The timing of initial payments can be right away or years after the practices are begun, depending on the market and how it functions. Take this example of conventional versus no-till agriculture. You can see the difference in soil texture immediately. On the left, the 1.6% soil organic carbon soil is from a conventionally tilled farm, and it looks like pretty much concrete. The next door neighbor's untilled soil has 4.3% soil organic carbon and an ideal cottage cheese-like structure that any farmer would love. These two are the identical soil type, and yet you see it's a difference between black and, well, not white, maybe tan. Off the National Resources Conservation Service website, NRCS, we see the most important soil health practices. Modeling programs like Comet Farm can predict their likely impacts in any given region. 1. Keep the soil covered. This insulates it from excess heat and cold and decreases both wind and water erosion. 2. Minimize soil disturbance. This prevents the disruption of the soil microbial ecosystem, particularly mycorrhizal fungi. 3. Increase plant diversity. Numerous years of no-tillage and crop diversity will result in a healthy, well-aggregated soil. 4. Have continual live plants and roots. In other words, plant cover crops to feed and protect your soil biology. 5. Livestock integration. It has been generally shown that what comes out of the back end of an animal is very efficient at feeding the microbial ecosystem. To these 5, many soil health experts would add minimization or even elimination of all chemical inputs, from fertilizers to insecticides to herbicides. I invite you to join our outreach efforts, speaking with farmers and ranchers in your area. Our marvelous team volunteers have created a website and populated a folder with lots of resources on how to get you started. Links to all of that will be made available with the recording and PowerPoint of this webinar. That's shown here. So where to start? look up our GCSA resources website for volunteers. You just start here, learn a little, and join up. If you have trouble getting started, you can reach out to me, Klaus Mauger, or Nancy Jacobson. They are the Ag Team leaders for the Business Climate Leader and CCL National Ag Team. Our interview team has been in motion since early January with wonderful volunteers from 10 states and almost every region. And the more the merrier. We have an intern who has begun to crunch our early data, and we intend to be able to deliver a valuable report for use by the CCL June lobby teams. It will help catalyze a deeper understanding between farmers and their members of Congress, aiding both parties. We have formed relationships with lots of farmers and have generated some endorsements for the GCSA and even for the Energy Innovation Act, which we're not even formally going out after that. We are sowing the seeds of change. Thank you.
Okay, so Julie already touched on this, but I think it's worth repeating. So I like this graph from the 2018 IPCC Special Report 1.5 to show how the GCSA and the EICDA complement each other. This is what the IPCC says needs to happen in order for the world to end up at 1.5 degrees Celsius. We, of course, need rapid decarbonization, reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. That is the strength of the EICDA. But we will also need to draw carbon out of the atmosphere, the negative emissions that Julie was talking about. If the temperature goes above 1.5 degrees Celsius increase, the only way to bring it down is by taking greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. And as Julie said, that's what plants can do through photosynthesis with storage in soil and wood. And that is the strength of the GCSA and other programs in the Farm Bill. So the GCSA isn't a silver bullet, just as the EICDA isn't a silver bullet. That's why I have pluses there. So let's look more closely at the EICDA and agriculture. It has an exemption for on-farm fossil fuel use. There's already a program for farmers to buy diesel without taxes included. This would become part of that program such that with the carbon fee wouldn't be included either. For other fossil fuels used on the farm, farmers apply for rebates for the amount of the carbon price for those fuels. The reason for this exemption is because many farmers can't pass the price increases on. They can't determine the price of their goods. They're price takers, not price makers. But it's important to also stress that to farmers that the EICDA places a fee on fossil fuels and not on emissions coming from the farm. This is not a cow tax. That misunderstanding of the cap and trade bill in 2009 helped to sink it, and we don't want that to happen with the EICDA. However, farmers may still have problems with the bill. A recent study looked at how the EICDA would impact the net returns farmers ended up with. Net returns is equal to the price they get for the crop minus the expenses they had growing it. In other words, their profits, if they come out ahead. The profits get smaller, or they get further in the hole, by a small amount the first year, but by more and more each year. This is mainly due to the increase in fertilizer costs as the price of natural gas increases, because it takes quite a bit of natural gas to make fertilizer. Since organic farmers don't use synthetic fertilizer, they wouldn't be as impacted. But the study didn't model any changes that would be expected to occur over time. Farmers can change their practices to use less fertilizer. there are now ways they can determine more precisely how much fertilizer to use and when and where to place it, so the crop gets just what it needs when it needs it. And we already talked about the decrease in the amount of fertilizer per yield farmers can get using soil health practices, such as conservation tillage with cover crops. There are also changes happening in fertilizer manufacturing. One thing that's actually happening on a commercial scale now is the capture of carbon dioxide emissions from fertilizer plants. Four that I know of in the U.S. And the EICDA has a rebate for those manufacturers who use CCUS, carbon capture use and storage. So given how it's hard to talk with some farmers about climate change and that the EICDA isn't an easy sell, I'd like to give you some wording that has worked for me to at least keep the conversation going. The wording on the screen now is part of the American Farm Bureau's policy on climate change. We support market-based solutions rather than federal or state emissions limits being used to achieve a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from any source. 2 years ago, I had asked my County Farm Bureau to support the EICDA. That did not go well, but I learned about some of their concerns, such as increases in gas prices that would cause haulers to raise their rates, and a fear that it would be better for urban people and that rural folks would basically get the shaft. But the next year, when I talked about a carbon price in these terms, what's up on the screen now, causing only slow increases in the price of gasoline and ensuring that costs and benefits fall equally on urban and rural people, they were okay with it. So this type of wording could be useful. So if you've found farmers who care about the climate, they are out there, are good with the EICDA, and they're ready to endorse, please have them go to the Agriculture's Climate Declaration. That way we have a listing of all agricultural endorsers to show our members of Congress. If for some reason they don't like the wording, they can go directly to energyinnovationact.org and endorse there. All is not lost if you don't get that far with a farmer. A cooperative extension agent gave me this advice a while back. Wait until after the bill has been passed by both the House and the Senate, because farmers won't be interested until then. Then visit them to talk about it and bring a Farm Bureau person with you. So before then, try to reach out to your local Farm Bureau. Again, talking about soil health first, and see where that takes you. And when you get to the point of talking about the EICDA with them, visit the EICDA Farm for Farmers campaign site on BCL Ag. Please join us in the Agriculture Action Team and the BCL Ag Outreach campaigns. You can find us in community by going to Connect, Action Teams, Agriculture, or Business Climate Leaders. So thanks.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you again so very much, Nancy and Julie, for all of your team's work. We really can't thank you enough for the important inroads that you're helping us make, and we look forward to continuing to make that progress.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to all the volunteers that have actually been the motive force for doing this, because they're the ones, and I so appreciate them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.